On Pilot TV this week, we celebrate James's absence. No, sorry, we celebrate this 400th episode of our glorious TV-based podcast. We'll be going back to 1981, where Bret Easton Ellis is hanging out with a possible serial killer in The Shards on Disney+. We'll reach Hit Point, Ewan Dave's first ever original drama, with Nick Blood and Saffron Hockey. And we'll be hanging out with Ricky Gervais's animated Alley Cats on the Netflix. Hi, I'm Boyd Hilton, and this is your essential guide to every show that matters. And yes, in theory, this is our 400th episode. Now, if you go through them, as I have done for hours and hours last night on the iTunes app thing on your iPhone, we've done more than 400 episodes, so I don't really know how it's calculated.
But basically, have you done James,
I don't know, James did the math. Oh. James decided that it was a 400th episode. Who
okay,
to
are
argue?
We saying he's been fiddling the numbers?
Yeah, probably. Anyway, instead of doing a special live show at King's Place in Victoria with hundreds of diehard James fans, we're doing this podcast remotely, way in advance of it going out actually on air, so to speak. And it's recorded not live in a lovely theatre, but live from our own homes, the homes of Kay Vander de Valk Ribeiro, Steph Vampire Lasilum.
Oh dear.
And,
oh dear.
And as if that's not enough.
It isn't enough.
We have a special surprise guest. Hello, Darren.
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 Darren. Darren.
Yeah, no, Darren.
Super Darren Harper. Woohoo.
Wow. Hello. Wow, one intro. Slightly ruined by Steph and Kay getting overexcited over your...
It was the intro you deserve. Oh, yeah. My God, Darren. Darren, the
you've
man.
Got to love, you've got to love a surprise guest who comes on with his own intro.
Mm. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Listeners thought, you know, the surprise guest, who could it be? You know, maybe it's like, I don't know, Ricky Gervais coming back because he hadn't said enough in my interview or whatever. Gugu and Buff the Raw, maybe, or I don't know.
No.
Even better.
Anya Taylor-Joy doing a return to talk about dogs again.
Please refer to her as her full name, Anya Taylor-Total-Joy.
Anya Taylor-Joy. But no, more importantly, we've got Darren, our esteemed, producer, editor? What's your official title, Darren?
King.
I suppose it's editor, but I usually put on LinkedIn producer because it sounds a bit more lofty.
Producer's good. So we start, as ever, gang, with what we've been watching, which Darren is going to join in with for this segment in the celebration of our Is It or Isn't It 400th episode. But before we get to Darren, let's build up the excitement and the tension by starting with Steph. Lasilum, what have you been watching?
Okay, guys. So you may or may not be aware that I am currently in the throes of a vampiric backlash, right? Okay, I may or may not have talked about this on Pilot Plus, but if you are not a subscriber, you will not know that I have been heading off various people getting quite upset. Now, I don't want to say there's been a gender divide in the comments, but what I would say is significant, and it kind of.
But what
goes
you would
between,
say is there is.
I just didn't want to say.
I'm not saying there is one. It's really, really, really noticeable. Right.
Let me just point out. You've said it now, and we you know, yeah.
Right. So let me just give you an idea. So on one hand, I've got some people. Let's just call them females, and they are saying things like, "Steph, I was really disappointed that you didn't like it," giving me impassioned long messages saying, "These are the reasons why it's actually really good. And you know what you should do? You should just go back and watch it because I think, you know, yes, I totally agree. If you started Lestat on this season when it's changed its name, you probably would think it's a bit mad, but give it another go. Hope you don't get too many nasty messages. Bye."
Do they all speak in that slightly weird voice?
That's the nice kind voice.
You're saying it's weird. That is Steph's voice.
That's my voice, yes. That's actually just my voice.
No, you definitely adopted a voice, but go on.
And on the other side, let's just call them men, right? Okay. A big portion of them are saying things like, "Oh, you fucking moron. Oh,
no.
Oh,
they're not saying that.
Oh,
Steph,
you're full of shit. Oh," but and not offering, not just saying basically you're awful, right? So, like, No, I'm not, in between, there's been some menus. But I'm just saying, like, the women have been encouraging. And for those women, for those lovely women, do you know what I've been watching?
Oh, Colin from Accounts.
Yes, Colin from Accounts. It's funny. No, I have gone back.
Are you serious?
No, I have gone back. She's not. And watched Interview with the Vampire.
Season one.
Okay. That's real
series
commitment.
One, right?
Great.
Because mostly because some of these lovely people were like, no, it's really good. And I said, okay, you know what, guys? If you're telling me this is a show I might really like, I don't want to miss out. Oh, no. And here are my notes on Interview with the Vampire.
I'm nervous.
Crucially, right, what's really crucial about this, and I've made this point on Plus, right? Let's remember, series one was called Interview with the Vampire. Series two was called Interview with a Vampire. Series three was called The Vampire Lestat, a completely different name. And I am still going to maintain that some people might believe, maybe you think this is silly, they might believe that's a completely different thing, or you know, it's a complete tonal shift. It is a tonal shift. So I hadn't watched season one and two, which is a big reason why we don't usually review third seasons of stuff on this podcast anyway.
Well, unless James wants to. This is the background behind why we reviewed this, because yep. It's one of James's favorite shows,
right?
Carry on.
He had issues with it though, right?
This third season. Yeah,
so
by the way, just to interrupt you,
please do.
I have to point out that in fact the irony of all this is that on the BBC official schedules, BBC2's official schedule goes out on BBC2 in this country, they changed the title to The Vampire Lestat : Interview with the Vampire.
What?
Well, that's insane.
So I just throw that in.
Okay.
There.
And
carry
also,
on.
That should be, it should be Interview with the Vampire : The Vampire Lestat.
Well, yeah.
Yes, but that, exactly. Yeah.
The newness of the Vampire Lestat element puts that to the front of the colon. Carry on.
Anyway, I've left people hanging for long enough. Guys.
Okay.
I fucking loved it. I absolutely loved it.
I was going to guess.
It was so good. And when I say these, right, the first episode of season one and the first episode of season three are night and day, ironically, for vampires. It's unbelievable. Here's some things I love about it. Okay, so you start with Daniel Malloy, who is the journalist. Okay, so it has a much more kind of linear narrative in the fact that you start with him and then he does the flashback. My God, it's so beautifully shot. It's an era I love. So they're in 1910s New Orleans and you're meeting Louis, and Louis is dealing with like all the race issues, and he's a pimp. He's trying to help his family survive. I mean, he is absolutely gorgeous. What's his name? The guy who plays him?
Raleigh Ritchie.
Jacob Anderson. His music name is
Raleigh Rich, isn't it?
Right. Is he a rapper? What does he do?
He sings.
I feel like I've seen him do something, but anyway, oh my God. He is so sexy. He's beautiful.
But here's the real reason why you loved it. Yeah.
No, he's gorgeous. I mean, and also, do you know, he's got they're both gorgeous in this. It's absolutely stunning. The story is brilliant. It's so well acted. Mm. I mean, I could not. Like, I was like, this is absolutely brilliant. This is so good. Obviously, it's not, I really enjoy the fact that it's not faithful to the film. I really liked Interview with the Vampire, the film, when I watched it. I haven't watched it for absolutely years, so I couldn't really remember it. And I was like, this isn't, I love that they've changed it up.
The film wasn't faithful to the book.
Yes.
So the series has gone back to the book and is much more faithful to the book.
And it's the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, right decision. Okay. So, yeah. Acting exquisite, storyline was exceptional. I love the whole Louis perspective of everything. I even like the beginning where they, because he's in Dubai at the moment, and that obviously he's, you know, doing the retelling of how this whole thing happened and where he meets Lestat. And Lestat is brilliant in this because he's not screaming at me. Guys, you know what? I can see why you love this show, because I really, really liked it. I'm going to carry on watching it. But what I'm scared about is I'm scared that what's going to happen to me happened to James. So obviously I've seen the first episode of season three, and I didn't like it, as I've said. But I'm hoping that if I watch season one and two, it'll build to the point that actually I'll go, okay, this all makes sense now.
the complicating factor in all of this is that season three is a complete left turn from seasons one and two. Right. It's a whole new world, and it's dominated by storyline and Lestat becoming a rock star that may or may not float your boat, so to speak. It's completely different, you know. So it's not a case of you taking a left turn from a show that you hadn't seen.
The show's left turn from me,
So I think it's very good that you've watched the first seasons because they are completely different in tonally. And James talked about this, you know.
He did talk about it.
So, but... I think it's all fine, basically, the bottom line.
Thanks, Boyd.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a delight.
But funnily enough, I had a correspondent Blue Sky?
Yeah,
what's Blue Sky?
You know, it's
like the new Twitter.
Yeah, it's like the Twitter thing. I'm on it. I don't use it myself, but people message me on it. People who used to be on Twitter, who boycott X because of reasons, you know, Elon Musk and all that. Anyway, Lee Carter often sends me messages, and he sent me this message about Vampire Lestat. He said, "Vampire Lestat is bloody good stuff. Complete change from the first two series. Camp as fuck. To be fair, the music and vocals are great. They serve the story, especially later on in the series." Now, I'm not sure whether he meant to say, to be fair, the music and vocals aren't great. And do you know what I mean? I got a typo. Because the way
I think it's a typo.
It doesn't make sense.
Well, I think he means aren't great, because somebody else who was quite angry messaged to say that the whole point was that Lestat was supposed to be terrible at singing in the first, and that actually he got better. But that's not the only thing I watched. Can I just mention the other thing I watched?
You can mention you want, as long as you do within the next hour, 20 minutes.
I'm only going to mention it really briefly because it was just, it was so horrifying. Jared Leto, Hollywood's Dark Secret.
Oh, I haven't watched it. But...
fuck me. Do you know what I mean? Like, why is everyone such a monster? Christ. And let me just say, he has said, yes. So he has said, he has publicly said, I released a statement. I have never sexually assaulted anyone in my entire life. Okay? So that is what he has said. But yes, this is a documentary where women
It's an iPlayer, isn't it?
It's on BBC iPlayer. It's 57 minutes where women are accusing Jared Leto of various assaults. That's all I'm going to say about it, because these things are horrible and messy to talk about. But my God, it's just, that's it. That's my official,
Yeah, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Kay, what have you been watching?
Okay, so I have been watching things that are not very on brand for me, but I'm bringing them up because Steph might have watched them. And actually, maybe Darren as well.
But not me.
Well, no.
Oh,
well,
you I don't feel left out.
I'm intrigued. Don't worry about it.
You're still our favourite.
Yeah, don't worry.
Is it Foundation?
Darren. Darren, come on here dropping the F-bomb. No, it's true crime stuff. So, first of all, A Toxic Love Story on Netflix.
Have you seen it?
So, Boyd, have you seen it?
No.
Why on earth have you watched that?
I've been forced to watch more true crime.
Okay, but, well then I will just say, you need to do reviews for Crime Monthly. We'll get onto that.
I'm not looking to take on more responsibilities and work. But there's two that I wanted to bring up because actually I thought they were really well done and fascinating. So A Toxic Love Story, if you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix, and it's about a US Deputy Marshal called Ian Diaz, who claims that his ex-fiance Michelle is obsessively stalking and harassing him and his wife Angela. And when it began, right, so I am just generally quite a passive viewer. I just like things to unfold before my eyes. I'm not trying to guess. I'm not trying to overthink anything. Yet for some reason this starts up in the first 5 minutes, and like really arrogantly I'm sitting there going, oh yeah, I know how this is going to end up. Yeah, oh God. Yeah, bog standard. Yeah, guilty. All this, you know, I was giving it the big one in my head. I was like, clear cut, this is going to be an easy watch because I know where it's going.
Twisty McTwisterson.
Was I wrong? Mm. This is twisted. It is very toxic, as the title suggests. It is unbelievable, the layers of deception and villainy involved. And yeah, I just couldn't, it's so hard to fathom. And at points I was like, this can't be really. And then yeah, all the obviously body cam footage and first person testimonials just help kind of bring the severity of the situation. Like yeah, it just
compounds
everything.
You can't
everything.
Talk
it's
about just, it without giving away anything. That's really what's really hard about this,
isn't it? It's incredible, the sort of consequences for the victims involved. That's what I'll say. Like, okay, so that was the first true crime, slice of true crime. And then the second one, which I also found interesting, which is on iPlayer, the third series, third episode, it's a three-part series, dropped, I think, this week, is The Devil in the Family, The Fall of Ruby Frankie.
Yeah.
Yeah?
100% yes.
Did you like it?
Oh, I loved it. I watched it ages ago because it was on Disney Plus initially, maybe about a year ago, and I watched it when it dropped on there, and it is incredible. Incredible.
It's extraordinary. Steph, do you know the story?
I have written a approximately 5 features about Ruby.
Steph invented Ruby.
Yes. Ruby is an absolute fucking monster. But yeah, Carolyn K. No, she's in prison. She's very much convicted along with her.
Okay.
Along with her partner.
As long as we're safe legally, our legal advisors.
Yeah. This Mormon mumfluencer isn't coming for us.
Yeah, she's going nowhere.
She and her life guru / friend / possible partner, Jody Hildebrand, basically they ended up abusing her youngest children. And we learn about what happened across 3 episodes and how it started off her Ruby just being like this very popular, successful Mormon mum influencer. And, you know,
Is this the one that Tom Davis talked about on The Wolf and Out? I think it is.
I'm sure it is. It's a huge story. It's probably the biggest globally known kind of mumfluencer fall from grace because she's a fucking crazy bitch.
Sorry.
Carry on.
Sorry.
Okay.
So yeah, anyway, so no, it just details it. But I mean, it's just an extraordinary story, the level of like brainwashing and the husband's sort of contribution, like how he played a part and his reaction to all of it afterwards. That's what I mean, the levels, it's horrific to hear about what those poor kids went through, and it's so distressing. The third episode is particularly distressing because we discover what happened to them. But you know, for me, not as shocking, but I thought it was appalling to see him sort of explain his part and, you know, the fact that he still loves Ruby, and you know, but again, it just shows the level of brainwashing. It has to be seen to be believed.
I think the thing with this is that he is indoctrinated into her world. He becomes indoctrinated, and everyone around her kind of does. But what makes this so horrific, has even more horrific, is that because she was an influencer, so she's like pushing out all her content, and you get to see this Jekyll and Hyde. And that is so frightening.
Yeah.
And you can imagine as a child, or anyone in her sphere, to be a party to that. And there's clips. We won't give it away because it's an amazing watch where you see her turn.
It's astonishing to see the candid moments that aren't made public. Yeah.
And if you, I can't remember if it was in this, when they actually go and arrest Hildebrand and they go to her big compound and these people are living in a huge house and she had a pantry full of food and they, and when they go and arrest her. No. This is like, if you kind of know about this case, she's arrested. They're both in prison. Mm. The body cam footage. So this is layered with real footage, which makes it exceptionally good.
And the bottom line with them is that they felt that the children, because of their beliefs and because of Jodie's influence, they believed that the children were possessed by the demon. And so anyway. It's complicated. It's worth watching, and it's on iPlayer. It's just 3 episodes, but very powerful. And then to kind of cleanse myself of all of that.
Oh my god! I'm so excited that you watched all this true crime.
Don't get too excited.
Don't worry, Steph. I'll be giving her way more true crime shows to preview now.
No,
I'm so happy. Yeah, I'm glad because
I can handle these two shows for some reason.
Anyway,
a certain level of true crime.
Can I give you a list of true crimes that I think you will enjoy? In our private time, I'm going to do it.
Yes,
okay.
Subscribe to that list as well, please.
Dad,
we'll start a WhatsApp group.
Well, to celebrate the 400th episode, why don't you give us 400 true crime shows?
Fine. You can do it now.
You had a palate cleanser.
Palate cleanser is always The Piano on Channel 4. And if you haven't seen it, I urge you, please, Darren, don't shake your head like that.
I'm not. It is lovely. It is lovely. But I watched the first series and, that was enough.
Oh. Okay, well, for everyone else who's got a heart and soul, right, tune in. Tune in, because if you need some joy in your life, if your cup of joy needs topping up, it is brilliant for that. So, you know, people come to public spaces, the train stations, play the piano for Mika and a revolving guest of judges. Claudia's there being fantastic. In the episode I've just seen, she brought her dog along because she couldn't find anyone to look after him. So that added a layer of excitement. And also, Boyd, just quickly, she bumped into, at Liverpool Street Station, ultimate traitor, Stephen. Do you remember Stephen?
Oh, yeah, dungaree guy.
Yeah. It was a nice moment.
Oh, well, lovely. Absolutely.
So anyway, it's heartwarming and, I love it.
Yeah, oh, no, of course.
Oh, it's a real mixed bag, that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I needed something to lift my spirits.
I can.
Before we turn to our special guests and find out what he's been watching, I've been watching, so I've got a show that is coming up that's going to annoy the people who get annoyed when we say stuff. It's coming up that is exciting that I can't watch it because they're normal people. And that show.
Normal people. As are you, Boyd. As are you, a normal person.
Do not.
Unbelievable.
You cannot channel James in this way, please.
No, it was a reference to James. I was just joking.
Okay, fine.
Lanterns is coming up soon. This is set in the DC universe, but with the Green Lantern. It's a heavy reboot.
It's a passing of the torch.
It's a passing of the torch, if you will. And I'm very busy at the moment. I'm going on holiday tomorrow. By the time this goes out, I'll be in Barcelona.
Well, thank you for making time for us.
I've got tons of things to do. I had four podcasts to record. Scripts to
write. Wait a minute, let me get my little violin.
Mini violin. Right.
Yeah, but this is not a review, but just to say I watched too many episodes of Lanterns for my own good when I have lots of other stuff to do. Anyway, but it's not a review because it's heavily embargoed and we will be reviewing it when the week it emerges on HBO Max. Did I say it was on HBO Max? No, it's on HBO Max. I've also watched, in complete contrast, this really is a contrast. I forgot to mention, have you ever watched Celebrity Escape to the Country on BBC One?
No, is it good?
Celebrity Escape to the Country.
Yeah, you weren't expecting that, were you?
No. Boyd, we've all got palate cleansers.
Sunday night, BBC One, it's like the perfect end of the weekend is here. Antics Roadshow is probably going to be on at 8 o'clock.
Oh, that BBC reminds me, it's homework time.
New drama on at 9, some kind of, thriller drama show's going on. But then at 7... In that difficult 7 o'clock slot on BBC One on Sunday, you often get Celebrity Escape to the Country. And if you haven't seen this format, it's basically a celebrity is taken by the show's excellent host to who's interested in buying a second home in the country, and they go to and the presenter finds like three or four different options. And they go and visit these different properties, and the celebrity decides if any they like most.
So it's
and
like basically also... Property Ladder.
Yeah.
It's like Escape to the Country celebrities.
It's absolutely Escape to the Country with just celebrities. Yeah. But in case people hadn't watched Escape to the Country.
Why not?
Well,
great.
Exactly. But last week's episode, I often end up watching it. Last week's episode was with Janet Street Porter.
Oh.
Yes, exactly. Now you're talking.
Bring it on.
Of Loose Women, etc.
I've been to Janet.
There's no way that Janet wants to escape to the country. There is just no way.
No, she does. She does.
No.
I think if it's got good transport links, she'll be up for it.
Exactly. She's got a flat, I think, in the Barbican.
I've seen her around there recently.
There you go. Kay's been stalking her. What coincidence. But she also does, she loves the idea of like a really kind of separated countryside home. She's so brilliant. She doesn't want to see any other house within the vicinity of her house in the country. So literally there's like one, you could just see out the corner of the window. There was like another house about 10 miles away down the road. She's like, no, this is not privacy.
She
knows what her mind. And she's so funny. As she's dragged around these various roads, she's like, no, this is shit. I don't know this. Eventually, spoiler alert, they take her to this. She talks about going to the height to Scotland, and they go to like an obscure island in Scotland, and it all gets very exciting and interesting. And it's just a great hour
of TV.
Honestly,
Scotland. Is this what you're breaking?
Don't make no spoilers.
I don't know if she's actually, no spoilers, but yeah, she's certainly very, surely very interested in a Scottish escape. A Scottish escape to write her, she writes columns for some paper or other, I don't know, The Eye or The Independent, something like that. And obviously she writes her scripts for Loose Women and she writes books, etc. So she, yeah, she needs an escape, as we all do.
But how do you think this comes about? Do you think celebrities just like, do you know what I've really been thinking about? I've been thinking about escaping to the country. And then some producers are like, whoa.
That's it. Let's go. Steph, that's exactly how it works.
Great.
Yeah. So there's that. And finally, I've mentioned this show before as one of my formative, the shows of my youth growing up, as one of the most influential shows and important and classic shows. No, not close at all. This show, but now this show this week, as we're recording this, is celebrating its 50th anniversary. And there was a whole night, last night, of shows about this stuff, and they showed the first few episodes and they're showing the whole thing, I think, on BBC4. I, Claudius.
Okay.
No. I, Clavdivs, as we call it. It's got the, it's got the Roman numerals. It's absolutely, it's so good. It's insane. The script, the dialogue, the acting, it's incredible. And it's very, very upfront in its kind of like depiction of perverse activity, shall we say.
Yeah.
The episodes with Caligula, John Hurt as Caligula. So Derek Jacobi plays Claudius, who's writing this whole history of the Roman era. And kind of halfway through the series, John Hurt pops up as Caligula. And Caligula was the most depraved, famously the most depraved person in that era. And bards are not held back. And you get a full sense of his twisted, sick and twisted personality. But it's just, it's all shot on video. So it kind of looks like, it's a bit of a shock to the system for the youth. You guys, if you try to watch it, probably, I'm talking about Kay and Steph here, Jones. I don't know, Darren's an indeterminate age. He could be anything.
I did watch I,
Claudius. So there you go.
Yeah. I preferred the Frankie Howard version.
Pompeii.
Pompeii's fantastic. Oh, yeah, okay.
Love Frankie Howard.
But it's sort of shot on video. So it looks like a sitcom from the 70s, which is when it was made.
Yeah.
But that's how they made stuff back then. So, you know, most stuff was shot on video. And it doesn't really detract from the brilliance of the acting, as I said, and the writing. And even the visually, within the format of it being shot on video, it's still handled brilliantly. So anyway, I ended up rewatching a couple of episodes of I, Claudius the other night as well, in the middle of my hectic whirlwind. And that's my final entry in what I've been watching. But now here, it's Darren. We find out about Darren, our editor, producer, whatever. Darren,
the man behind the magic.
Guru. The man behind the magic. The man who has to listen to him being called Darren, yell Darren every time he cocks something up, Darren, which is Darren, all the
Darren,
time.
Darren.
So what, Darren, have you been watching?
Oh, hold on, Boyd. And specifically, Darren, what have you been watching for the last 400 episodes? So if you could just take us through that, everything you've been watching since the start of the podcast, that'd be great.
I always go with everybody's recommendations, obviously, on my sofa list. I didn't find out about sofa until starting to edit this podcast. So I always go with your recommendations. And my wife said to me, who do you most align with on the podcast?
I can guess.
Please be me.
Who do you guess, Kay?
I think Boyd with Shades of James.
I think it's Boyd, it's Steph, it's Kay, it's Terry, it's James. all of the above. Because I think I'm probably more aligned with Boyd. Because I tend to like a lot of things. A lot of things. I don't think there's a one particular thing. I'm not a massive fan of Foundation, so that really sort of
takes me out
of that, really. But I do like a lot of the stuff that James does like as well. So that's a bit of a weird one. But what I've been watching, and obviously, yeah, you say obviously my name quite a bit during the
PTSD.
I do, because I get a few of them. So there's
Darren, what a ledge.
There's that one. Where's the other one? I've got another one here.
Darren, you've lifted my spirits. Thank you, Darren. I needed that.
I'd wonder what was being offered, but yes.
there's plenty. Obviously, wait for the blooper reel at the end of the year.
Oh, no, Darren. So
for more fun and laughter.
Not that blooper reel.
But what I've been watching, I'll tell you what, I caught yesterday, and it dropped on the Sky, and it's on Sky Atlantic, and I watched the first two episodes last night. I don't know if you reviewed it. I can't remember if you reviewed it or not. It's called Station 11.
I think we reviewed it way back in the day, yeah, because this is quite an old show.
Is it?
Yeah, it was originally on, I think it was on Fox, which doesn't exist anymore. Fox was a channel, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking as if it's like in the 50s, but it was probably like 10 years ago, or 5 to 10 years ago. And I'm pretty sure Station, that's off the top of my head, but Station 11, yeah, was a big deal. But I think this is the first time it's been available to general viewers via Sky, yeah.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, because I've not, and it's got Tam from EastEnders in it. Yeah, Tamwa. So I watched that, and I thought that was quite good. Yeah. That was quite good. First couple of episodes, I'm in. It's all about like a flu pandemic, which, you know, can be slightly triggering. Yeah. But it was pretty good. I really enjoyed that. I do have to talk about Ride or Die.
Oh, yes.
Because,
yes. No.
This is another one. This is another, just to remind listeners that Steph insisted that only women get Ride or Die, and men. So have you fallen into the trap, Darren, of being a man and not liking it?
No. So I did like it. I binged all of it. Holiday last week and I binged a lot.
Oh, okay.
When I was in my caravan with the wife. And we both enjoyed it. I love the story. I thought the acting's a little bit wooden.
Ooh.
All the way through. No, and just from sort of like, my wife said, it was very much drama school acting.
Get in the bin, Darren. Get in the actual bin.
I like that. Daring attack on Hannah Waddingham.
Mrs. Darren, who needs to get in the bin?
My thing about it was, Kay, right, is that I didn't think that Boyd could appreciate the intricacies of female friendships later on in life. That's what I thought. Do you know what I mean? Because it's Octavia Spencer and Hannah Waddingham, and I felt strongly that the reason he didn't enjoy it was that.
Steph claimed that all of the people who've been negative about the show are men, and all the people who've been positive about the show are women. You may feel I'm simplifying this, but she absolutely insisted on that. So, and in fact, I've forgotten that I listened to the Jonathan and Honey Ross podcast, and they reviewed it on that, and Honey Ross, Jonathan's daughter, didn't like it either. Anyway, Darren, back to Darren.
Yeah, so it was my wife that didn't like the acting. I actually quite enjoyed the whole show, and I think that the best bit was Octavia Spencer and Hannah Waddingham. But I like the story. I thought it was, I'm intrigued to see they dropped all the episodes at once, which is another sort of. I love that when they do that because I want to watch it when I want to watch it. This dropping stuff weekly, Apple, no.
No, you want to do it on your time.
Yeah,
you're gonna have
exactly.
You're going to have to wait for Ted, I'm afraid.
Do not dictate to me when I can watch a TV series because that's why I have to wait for things now. The other thing I was going to watch it is The Pit. And I remember Boydie saying only an episode or so ago, which might have been Monday, that it's the sort of show that you have to binge. Mm. You can't just watch The Pit one a week. Impossible. I've done 15 episodes in over 2.5 nights because it's just, you cannot stop watching this stuff. It's so good. So I'm fully in with the Pit. But the final thing I wanted to bring up, Little House on the Prairie.
Did you like it?
Yes, Darren.
Now, I was a massive fan of Little House on the Prairie growing up.
The OG.
Yeah, the OG.
Yeah.
I love the music. I was sort of thinking there's one problem with it, which is they missed an open goal of just having her run down a hill with going at the end. And I just thought everybody would have thought, oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
It is like Fisher Price, My First Yellowstone. but,
great description.
But I really liked it.
Thank you, Darren. Yes, as did I.
No, I quite liked it. So didn't we generally quite like it?
I think James didn't it, maybe. Someone didn't like it. I accidentally watched every single episode
because
it was a lovely watch.
Yeah.
It was,
Jack the Dog stole the show, I think.
Jack the Dog. Jack the Dog. God.
The Dog was great.
Jeopardy was a real pull for me.
Yeah.
Plus, it's got Sawyer from Lost, isn't it? Looking completely different with black hair now, not like his lovely curtain hair that he had in Lost. And my wife very much liked Mr. Ingalls. So that was a tick in the box. In fact, I think all the male actors.
Not a euphemism. That was no. that was a euphemism. Let's just be very clear.
My mind went somewhere else.
Dirty.
I think all the lead male actors are, let's say, a snack.
They've cast hunks, haven't they?
They've cast well. But I really enjoyed it. I didn't realise that this actual first season is set before they get to where Little House on the Prairie was in the original series, because then they showed some stuff at the end. And I was like, oh, right, I didn't realise that. So I'm just hoping... And I don't know if it's been renewed for a second season.
Let's get a number crunch on that, Boyd.
In my mind, it has been, but I don't know if that's just... I'm just making that up.
I said at the time that I felt, because I love Deadwood, and I said it had Deadwood vibes, and James poo-pooed it. And then some other people said it had Deadwood vibes, and then he said it did have Deadwood vibes.
I mean, it's like you certificate Deadwood, yeah. But, oh, yeah, Little House on the Prairie season 2 is coming to Netflix.
There you go, Darren.
Come on.
There you go. Yeah, officially renewed. That news broke on the 11th of July. So, yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
I tell you what, it's filling like a Gilmore Girls hole for me. It's got that lovely sort of like, there's zero jeopardy. Steady.
Darren, I wasn't expecting this element.
I really wasn't either. Yeah. Like filling Darren's holes, ticking
Darren's
boxes.
Coming, bringing the smut.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, you've got to love a Gilmore Girls binge. When I was going to say something else, then and quickly
just
stopped myself.
Not for that.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah.
Sense yourself.
I think this is an indication. This is why we don't have Darren on the show every week.
Darren is out of control.
Yeah.
He's going to get cancelled, and then he won't be able to edit the podcast.
Exactly.
And it'll be
that's exactly. true. That's true.
But
that's true.
What a joy to have you on at this our special 400th or is it episode?
Yeah.
And thank you so much. And that's I love that. Nice insight into actual Darren's own views there. We now to say
problem.
Goodbye to Darren. Thank you.
Thank you, Darren.
Bye,
Darren.
Bye. Bye. We continue to stick with the format of the show. And that format means that Kay is going to unravel the postbag to give us a question from a viewer and listener.
Right. Our message is from Steve, who says, hi, team. More industry and succession talk. Sorry. I just finished industry and I'm not sure why. I was all set to stop watching after series 3 because I find it just fine. And yet every season I get stuck in by glowing reviews from the likes of Boyd and maybe some FOMO, and I can't say why I end up watching. I did the same thing with Succession and never successfully cut ties. They're both mostly fine shows and I've enjoyed big parts of both, but find a lot of it really overrated. Also, as discussed, it's a fail on the bell end test. Have you ever successfully given a show away that you've put a lot of time into? Do you have any advice? Cheers, Steve. My answer is very quick and simple.
You've gone for a classic one-er.
And it's kind of a one-er and a one-er and a nunner, because I don't tend to do that if I've invested a lot of time in something, because I just, you know what I mean, I just need to see how it ends, and
yeah,
I've dedicated too much life to it. I think anything beyond 3 series, then I'm definitely finishing it.
But have you got specific shows to answer the question?
No, as in I'm saying when I watch more than
series. Never done it.
I don't tail off because I've invested.
When Kay sent this question, I don't do it. Do you know what I did have kind of issues with midway through, but then I went back to it?
Yeah.
Stranger Things. At one point I was like, I think I'm done with Stranger Things. I think I'm done. But then I went back to it and it's great. But I can't even think of a single show that I've given up, because exactly as Kay said, like once I've invested, I need to see it completed. I need to know.
So now that you've watched the first 2 seasons of Interview with the Vampire and the start of the Vampire, does that mean you're now hooked in? You can't leave.
No,
you have to carry on watching it for the rest of humanity.
No, now I've started watching Interview with the Vampire. Now that's very different, because now I've started watching Interview with the Vampire, I think I'm going to end up watching the first season and the second season, and I don't think I'm going to watch the stat. That's what I think, but I don't know, because I think of the tonal shift, which I'm seeing is
stay
a very
open,
big sign.
Stay open.
But you know what? I'm staying open because I'm hoping that the wave of wonderfulness will carry me through. But yeah, I've never given up a show that I've invested in, because also I think once you start watching it, like if you've watched a couple of episodes, then you can give it up then. And then, do you know what I mean? Then you know if you don't, you're not going to like it.
Yeah. Oh, well, the system of questions is going well.
What about you, Boydo?
No, just saying.
What's your great answer?
Yeah, go on. Wow.
Oh, you're getting all prickly, I see, just because I'm pointing out you, neither of you answered the question. Well, I'll tell you, I've got some examples.
We have answered the question. We're saying we don't do it.
Well, yeah.
That is answering
the question.
The question
was, have you ever given up a show? Yeah. Answer, no.
And do you have any advice? My advice would be, if you don't like it after a couple of episodes, just don't even get involved in it.
My advice would be, stay committed.
I look forward to future listener questions where the answer is just no. A series of special.
It would make the podcast shorter.
After we've got Darren in for the 400th, why not just have 400 listener questions? All the answer is no.
I just say, very quickly in my defence, what I would say is the post bag has very much run dry. And we didn't have any opportunities to do a shout out because various people were off. And Boyd didn't think to put it on socials. And...
I think it's a good question. It doesn't mean it's not a good question if the answer is just yes or no. That's what questions are.
That's what questions are from Steph there. Yes, indeed, that's what questions are. That's what friends are for. Who would you say that? Dionne Warwick? Anyway, I have actual examples of yes.
Right, okay, well, good. Well, then you're doing it. You're doing all the work. Go on.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I have to. Yes. The Walking Dead.
Oh.
So The Walking Dead, for me, it was all about, I loved Andrew Lincoln, obviously, in it. Known him for years. Name drop.
Oh, clang.
loved the first few seasons. It was a proper horror drama. It didn't hold back on the horror. Then when it started getting, it became the biggest show on American TV at one point. It's on AMC in America, which I think was the channel that gave us like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and Mad Men. Lots of really... AMC is often forgotten in the whole, you know, kind of all the best American shows, HBO we know about and Netflix, but AMC was big back then. And this became the biggest show on American TV, but oh my God, it got very repetitive and just kind of, I lost it. So I stopped watching that after, I think it was 4 or 5 series. Westworld started off as a brilliant version of that idea of, you know, a kind of amusement park where absolutely lifelike android, if you like, versions of humans, you play games with them, and that games would end up being lethal, where it's supposed to be, you know, you're in a gunfight in a fictional Western world, as per the title. And then, they actually turned on the humans. And it's a brilliant idea. And it was a great film with Yul Brynner in the early 70s. And the first season, that maybe the first couple of seasons of Westworld, I thought were really good. That's an HBO show. It was on Sky here. Then it started getting really complicated with timelines. I don't know if either of you watched it. It was like, by season 3, honestly, I felt like there were like 8 different timelines, 9 million different plot twists. And I just didn't understand. I remember watching, I think, season 3 or 4, and just genuinely not understanding what the fuck was going on.
Were people talking too loudly?
No, that wasn't the problem, Steph. Steph is referring to my penchant for criticizing shows where people are shouting at each other. No.
Or whispering.
Or whispering too much. Yeah, exactly. Neither of those is the problem. It was just unbelievably complicated, and it just disappeared up its own fundament. And my final example is Homeland. Homeland, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
I'm just going to... I'll allow it. Go on. Tell me why.
Well, I think that went stretched to like 7, 8 series, mainly. Claire Danes, brilliant.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's been very influential, I think, Homeland. It has, because, you know, spawned like loads and loads, or certainly influenced loads and loads of espionage thriller-type shows, which feel very topical. You know, it reflected all the kind of big news stories at the time. But I think halfway through, it just became very repetitive. And cast members left, and they carried on without them. And Claire Danes was crying in every single episode and every single scene. It just got too much for me. So those are things that I gave up on. I think I remember going back to the finale of Homeland, thinking I really should catch up on the previous couple of seasons, but
oh,
couldn't
God.
Be bothered.
Boyd, right? Can I issue a plea? Right, yeah. And also I've just remembered something I gave up on. Right, please go back and watch Homeland. Please, I did a rewatch recently, and Homeland is just absolutely stunning. And you should go back and watch it. Okay.
When you say you did a rewatch, how many episodes did you watch? How many series?
Oh, when my dad was over and he decided to start watching Homeland, so I was like doing
a rewatch.
Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now I just remembered what I gave up. Lost. I remember, yes. I gave up Lost because...
See, you're answering the question. Yeah, okay.
Well done, me. Right, okay. Yes, but I'd forgotten I'd given up because I did watch the finale. Like, I did watch something. It was like a two-part finale? I can't remember now. But anyway, I did
It was just extended. It was like...
It was an extended finale, you know, when they're in the church. No spoilers.
Yeah, and all of that kind of stuff.
But I gave that up. I think I gave that up. Oh, God, I can't even... think maybe second season.
Oh, really? Early doors?
Yeah, second or third season. Yeah, it's when they went over and they found the other people on the other side. I was like, no, I'm out.
Okay.
I'm out.
Well, that's a show that I was sorely tempted to abandon. Absolutely. Mm. But I stayed with it. And I kind of ended up hate watching the kind of like fourth, fifth, sixth seasons until we got to the finale, which I don't think worked. One of the famous controversies as to did or didn't Lost have a satisfying conclusion. For me, it didn't. But yeah. And that's very, very good examples. Thank you. See?
Okay, you remind me I did give up on Yellow Jackets.
All right, we just needed time.
Yellow Jackets is a great example. Yeah, I've only stuck with that.
I mean, but it wasn't like I'd invested tons into. I just watched one series and then I was like, no, okay, fine.
That's
you know, when series two started?
Yeah.
Like,
no,
oh, this is
series two to try my patience, I remember. Yeah. Right, see, excellent answers. Thank you very
much.
Okay,
fine.
You're welcome.
For listening to the question. Now, because we've hit so far in advance recording this, listeners, to, you know, draw the veil away. Why do you keep referencing the veil?
That?
I don't know. Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? There's no point in doing news, is there? I
mean, well, it would be 3 weeks old.
So instead of news, I'll tell you what I'm going to mention though quickly is, what I thought I'd do, because this is our 400th episode, I thought I'd go back to the very first episode. So... Terry invented the podcast. So in case listeners don't know, Pilot TV was an actual magazine that Terry White, one-time editor-in-chief of Empire, created with help from me and James. And it was her idea to do a podcast to kind of boost the whole idea of it, the brand. And so we started doing the podcast, the three of us. And the very first one, weirdly, was done before a live audience. At one of those kind of like, you know, media events, you know, one of those like ad week
like
type.
Like a panel event
Yeah,
type
like a
thing.
Panel. We were the panel on stage and there were loads of like potential advertisers and stuff like that in the audience. And you won't guess, but so this was in 2018, unless both of you have an encyclopedic knowledge of what happened in 2018. Can you guess what shows we covered on that very first episode?
I would say, is it final season Game of Thrones?
No.
It was coming up for that.
Yeah, I think that was later. 2019. Yeah.
Tell us. Go on, tell us.
Otherwise, we're going to be here for 400 hours.
Exactly, yeah. Bodyguard. Remember Jed Mercurio's Bodyguard? Yeah. And the funny thing about this is...
what's his name? The lead guy in that? Something Madden?
Yes. It's the one with Richard Madden. Yes.
Oh.
And Keely Hawes, right? And it was huge. It was massive. It was gigantic. And Jed Mercurio had already done quite a few seasons of Line of Duty, of course. But this was even more successful and popular. And it was absolutely kind of like the topic of popular culture that everyone was talking about. And what happened was, and remember, it was brilliant. It had spectacular twists and turns, spectacular ending. And everyone was like, whoa, when's season two happening? And it was constantly being asked Jed Mercurio when season two was going to happen. And he was like, get quite annoyed with people for asking him about it. And it's still never happened. We've never had season two of Bodyguard, which is extraordinary if you think about it. Like this year, we're getting the new Line of Duty, which has taken quite a long time.
Yeah, he's been busy,
to be fair. Yeah, he has been busy, to be fair. But that was one of the main shows. And then Killing Eve, what a period this was. Killing Eve. Was another show, and I was looking at the notes for that podcast, and the notes say a highly anticipated thriller, Killing Eve, from Fleabag creator Phoebe Waller-Bridge, which apparently took a long time to get to British TVs. So I don't remember this at all. Apparently, Killing Eve went out in America quite a long time before we actually had the chance to see, even though it felt like a British show, you know, with Phoebe Waller-Bridge at the centre of it and stuff. And finally. We did Black Earth Rising. Do you remember Black Earth Rising?
Which was Michaela Cole.
Yes, Michaela Cole. She didn't create it, but she was in it. She starred in it. And it was a really bold, daring drama. That was the other big show. What a lineup.
Gosh, that was a good, strong week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a strong week.
Fantastic. And finally, in episode two, in the second episode, which was, if you like, the first proper episode we recorded in the studio. I don't even remember how we did it, whether we did it remotely or in the studio or whatever. But it was the first proper episode without an audience, and it was the first proper thing. And the thing that we discussed on that day, what historic time this was the first of Jodie Whittaker's episodes of Doctor Who.
Oh, my God.
The 13th Doctor. And we all loved her, innit? And I remember, we all kind of were surprised by the way the turn it took, and just by the whole excitement of having a woman playing the Doctor, etc. And Chris Chibnall being the showrunner at that point, who's a kind of renowned and acclaimed scriptwriter. So it was all happening back in 2018 in the first few episodes of the Pilot TV podcast.
Well, that's when you were cheating on your other podcast. Basic Bingers.
Oh, yes.
You were cheating on our original podcast.
Wow. Steph, I'm glad you remember that. I totally forgot about his betrayal.
Absolute betrayal. And then what happened, Kay, is then you started cheating on me, and then it was just me on my own being a basic binger, couldn't actually exist.
What a path we trod.
Yes.
Yeah.
Someday someone will write the history of this whole situation, and I mean, it'll be very popular history, I'm sure. People will be fascinated. Anyway, but that concludes the non-news segment of the podcast. And
people should re-listen to the episode.
Well, I don't know about that. I wouldn't advocate that. No. Let's just
draw a line.
Yeah, let's draw a line. Let's draw a line under it.
Okay.
Moving on. It's time for the reviews, everyone.
Woohoo!
We start with one of the shows that I've been banging on about for weeks. In fact, I've been banging on about it as soon as it was announced, which is Ryan Murphy, the creator of American Horror Story, American Crime Story, Love Story recently. He has created, with the original writer of the book called The Shards, Bret Easton Ellis of American Psycho fame and Less Than Zero, which was published when he was like 20, 21 years old. And this show feels like an autobiographical thriller in which the main character is called Bret Easton Ellis and is a would-be young writer hanging out with his mates in high school in Los Angeles in 1980-81. And in the background, people are being abducted and killed because there's a serial killer on the loose. How all this ties together is a question for the viewers and the listeners, and maybe a question for Kay. Kay, what the hell did you make of The Shards?
I really like this. I mean, you'd been talking about it so much anyway, and so I'd sort of been primed to like it. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. It's a love letter to 80s LA, basically. It has fantastic like soundtracks, the costumes, the setting, the locations they use. And it's a deep dive into sort of like the affluence and the privilege of these young kids who have largely like successful but largely absent parents. And it's about how they are like fending for themselves. But they're doing pretty well because, you know, they're kind of occupying themselves with lots of drinks and drugs and parties. And it all centers around Brett's, played by Igby Rigney. Igby Rigney.
I know. I'm so
what
obsessed.
A name.
I'm so obsessed with Igby.
Let's have a second
Igby
for that, shall we?
Yeah.
And he, as Boyd said, is an aspiring writer. He's a closeted gay man, and he's in his senior year of high school. And he's sort of he's very charming and intelligent and ambitious, and he's a control freak as well. And he becomes incensed by the arrival of this student called Robert, played by Homer Gear, Richard Gear's son, which is like going to be ironic soon when I tell you that one of the other characters played by, is it Kaya Gerber?
Kaya Gerber.
Yeah.
And obviously their parents used to be married, which I find
Cindy and Rich.
Cindy Crawford. Amazing. Sorry, yeah. Cindy Crawford's her mother and Cindy and Richard. But anyway, so yeah, he plays Robert, and he's this new student, and Brett is kind of obsessed with him because he feels that he saw him a year or two previously in the cinema while he's watching The Shining. And the reason why he noticed him is because he fancied him. But when he sort of confronts Robert with this, or, you know, so says, oh, you know, I've seen you before, Robert just denies all knowledge of him. And that irks him. Like, that irks someone like Brett enormously. And then it becomes a fixation for him. And he becomes convinced that Robert is the trawler, who is the name for the serial killer who's going around abducting young women and killing pets. And so it's a story of that, but it's just, I don't know, I just found it so absorbing. And because of like the way it's been shot and the high quality of it, you just become immersed in this world. It's really interesting because you don't know if Brett is a reliable narrator or not, because And I had to check that Boyd and Steph, right? When it starts off and he's going to the cinema and he's really clear about it's on this date, I go to the cinema. And then a little while later, I remember the date because it was like connected to certain dates in my life, right? And then I was watching it and then the date suddenly changed and I had to rewind it because I was like, because I've got brain fog at the moment. I was like, oh, have I just been like, you know, a bit just forgetful there? And it was different. So I was like, oh, actually, is this because I'm watching a rough cut of this screener or is it actually, a purposeful thing to show that he's this unreliable narrator and we can't trust entirely what he says? But
oh, the latter for sure, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, so the whole series will be dominated by this fact that, you know, is Robert capable of these heinous crimes or is Brett weaving this story? I mean, he's a talented storyteller. He's got a love interest and her dad, is a big Hollywood screenwriter and sort of says, oh, yeah, I'll take you out for lunch to Brett. And we can discuss it, the idea being that he also fancies Brett. And so we know that Brett's a good storyteller. So how much of this is fact? How much is fiction? It's brilliant. But the only thing I would say is because I read ahead, because I wanted to know what the book was about kind of thing. I think that the ending is going to, I don't know if the end, I will enjoy the ending if they stick faithfully to this book, in which case I don't know if I can invest more time in it, but it is brilliant. And I think Ryan Murphy's back on form and it's obviously a great creative collaboration they've got here because, yeah.
Read the ending. I'm not going to spoil it, but what I would, because I've seen the whole thing, obviously, and 9 episodes. This is different to the ending of the book.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not going to go into more detail, but it's a whole other business.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. Oh, I might continue then.
Steph,
okay.
What did you make?
Well, I was really nervous about this, Boyd, because you've talked about it so much. You said you had really kind of like made me feel so excited about this. So much so I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to read this book because it's like Boyd said, it's like one of his favorite books from the last decade. And I thought, okay, this must be really special. And it absolutely didn't disappoint. I loved it. This is Ryan Murphy for me at his absolute best. I love, and Kay, you've made mention of this, the way, you know, Ryan Murphy's stuff is all very, the colour saturation really does draw you in and you feel completely like embraced by whatever you're watching. Igby Rigney screen presence is just, I couldn't take my eyes off him. And I know you're supposed to do that and that's the character, Brett's character. But he was mesmerizing to me. And actually everybody, because they're all these beautiful young people. Wes Bentley's in it now. Wes Bentley, this is big news for James because he is Jamie in Yellowstone.
Yes.
And so seeing him playing this character,
he's a great character.
Closeted,
creepy,
gay, your dad of Brett's girlfriend.
On the prowl.
Yeah, which was absolutely, it was a joy to me. One of the things that I loved, it immediately got me hooked, is the narration is so well done. And when Brett is talking, when he says, you know, kids today, they think they have it difficult, but our generation had it tougher because we had to put up with serial killers, right? And I was like, that is so true. And I'm just going to give you this fact. In the 80s, okay, there were, which was a historical peak for serial killers, there were in the United States, how many active serial killers do you think there were in the 80s in the United States?
I was going to go low. I was going to go too low. I was going to say 25, but now
25?
I'll say 25.
52.
770 active serial killers in the United States in the 80s.
That's brilliant.
Historical peak, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Absolute, right. So for me,
So it wasn't hyperbole when he said that.
No, it wasn't, right? And that's why I love the show. I mean, Kay and I, we were born in the early 80s. The 80s is an incredible, everything about this show is so absorbing. The only thing, okay, and the only thing that slightly upset me about it, and this is just absolutely a personal thing that I don't like, is because they've got all like the missing dogs and the displays, and obviously this is very Ryan Murphy, the displays of the bodies, I won't give anything away because I don't want to spoil it for anyone. That I found that quite hard to watch, but they do it well in fact they flash it quickly.
Yeah, they don't dwell on it.
They do not linger, and that to me is quite important because obviously Pet death is not good.
Pet death is distressing. Yeah.
The thing is, pet death is not for me, and I don't, you know, which sounds crazy because obviously I, you know, edit a magazine called Crime Monthly, but I found that quite hard. But yeah, so you've got the golden age of serial killers. You've got absolutely stonking soundtrack. Kaya Gerber. What's so incredible about her casting is because she is basically her mother. She brings that 80s supermodel vibe to it, and it feels so authentic. She's masterful casting. The beautiful cars, the whole 80s yuppie lifestyle, all of that was great. The gender fluidity, which I loved, all that exploration. It's kind of super erotic, isn't it? Yeah, I loved all of it.
Oh, brilliant. I'm really glad you both liked it. Because we haven't got long, but... What made The Shard so unique was that it started out on Bret Easton Ellis' podcast, which is still going, and I listen avidly every single week. And the way he did it was, I think it was in lockdown that started it. So he basically framed, it was not a novel at that point. He framed this as he's going to look back at his own life when he was a teenager, going to his posh prep school with his friends, and when there were serial killers around everywhere, and you're constantly scared that maybe the serial killer's going to stalk you. And then when this Mallory guy joined their friendship group, young Brett, who was a would-be writer, aged 18, suspected that Mallory was a serial killer, and because he saw him. And so he framed this whole thing as a memoir. Really, even to the point where his kind of producer on the show, his equivalent of Darren, our Darren, who edits the show, his version of that, who's always in the studio with Brett, who's a bit of a goofball, actually.
Unlike him, he
would ask Brett, like, so there really was a serial killer called the Trawler. And Brett would go, yeah, absolutely. I'm not making this up. So Brett himself said that all of this happened, and he stuck to that line through thick and thin. Every week he would start the podcast by reading out a long, long excerpt from The Shards, and it would build and build and build. And it went on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and he read out the whole thing. And only later did the publisher come to him and say, you've got to turn this into a book. He never intended it to be a book. He just intended it to be.
So he still maintains it's the trick. Like,
well,
this.
No, he doesn't. So now it's like, no. He didn't realize it was going to go that far
to become a book.
It really took off and became a huge thing. I remember Googling The Trawler, right? Because I couldn't work out whether it was fictional or real. So that was the extraordinary background to the story. And it was very, very sexual. You know, there are incredibly explicit scenes in it. And in fact, my one critique of this version, I think they've done a brilliant job. So Brett himself co-wrote the first couple of episodes with Ryan Murphy. I think it looks incredible, as you say. It's also not only it's got that grainy film quality of films back in 1981. It looks like it was made in the early 80s. The needle drops are actual needle drops.
Yeah.
Did you notice?
It's so authentic.
What's so clever is the needle drops arrive at parties, and you literally see the needle on the disc. And I thought that was so clever. And they do that four or five times in like their actual literal needle drops. And brilliant ones. The Ultravox song Vienna, which is key in the book, very, very key in the book. That has a huge place in it. All Duran Duran, Blondie, Stranglers, Golden Brown. Just the musical choices are phenomenal. Elvis Costello, etc. And the casting is absolutely brilliant. And Igby Rigney, you're right. Not only does he have the presence, he sounds like real Bret Easton Ellis. If you listen to the podcast, Bret Easton Ellis has quite a weird way of talking. He has a very specific, slightly odd way of speaking.
Yeah, intonation patterns, very specific.
Exactly. And he has meticulously recreated what the younger version of that voice must have been like, and the way he talks to other people and the way he speaks in general, and the narration is just perfect. So Igby Rigney, what a bit of casting. And he's got a real screen presence. He also kind of looks like the young Brett, because he's not like classically hunky handsome, right? He's kind of like a decent looking young guy.
He's striking though. He is striking.
Do you know what he is? He's self-assured.
Yeah. But, and even then, he's also a bit of an outsider. Even then, you know, with his, you know, being it gay and in the closet, etc. But he is perfect in that role. And as you say, all of the rest of them, Kaya Gerber, Wes Bentley, Evan Rachel Wood.
Oh, yes. Right? Yes, we should mention her.
I mentioned from Westworld, who is amazing in it. And she is the husband of the bisexual guy.
The wife,
her husband, Wes Bentley. And they, as a duo, they are incredible. They're bickering. Mm. And she also hates...
Oh, they're totally unhinged.
They're totally
unhinged.
She's
in torment.
She also hates her own daughter, fascinating enough. So all of that, I think they've done it brilliantly. I think they've captured the essence of the novel. So fancy. My one critique is, right, the novel is very, very explicit. And it's part of... And I feel they've slightly, weirdly, for Ryan Murphy, it feels actually... slightly less shocking than it might have been, and tonally not good. So, for example, in This Day of Off Campus, right, and Heated Rivalry, and all those shows, which are very raunchy and have a lot of, you know, scenes of intimacy and nakedness, nudity, they actually hold back a bit, if anything.
Are they sticking to 80s level of raunch?
I don't know what the... I think they're... No, I don't think it's that. I think they've just decided to... tone it down a bit for some reason.
I think they've toned that down because they've ramped up the murder.
Maybe.
Because actually those scenes are incredibly shocking. Like the scenes where the body placement, and that is really shocking. So I think maybe, I have no idea, but I think, I know what you mean. It feels like it could be much more sexually explicit. You know, these people are having like coke fueled orgies, for God's sake. But maybe it's kind of feels more powerful that you know they're having that, but you don't need to see it. But then you see the shocking scenes of the murder scenes, which are fucking horrendous.
Yeah. One of the critiques, that's an interesting point, because one of the criticisms of the novel from some critics was that he didn't tie together the serial killer storylines with the general like love interrelationship stories and the sex stuff, basically. And so maybe it was an attempt to do that. Maybe you're right. But it's definitely a decision they've taken. Mm-hmm. And I think it's slightly miscarried just because... the whole tone of the book is so immersed in the sex and the kind of interrelationships that go on.
That is strange, then it's not reflected.
So I think it's a bit of a weird decision. Yeah, but that's my one critique. But I loved it. Yeah, in general. And there are 9 episodes to come. So that is The Shards, which is on Disney Plus right now. Let's move on to Hit Point. Yeah, this is UK TV's first original drama series, commissioned specifically for you and Dave. And Dave, of course, we used to, you know, having like repeats of Would I Lie to You and, you know, documentaries about Absolutely Fabulous. In fact, they're on gold. Anyway, bottom line is it's an original show for UK TV. It stars Nick Blood and Saffron Hocking as a police duo investigating a daring robbery of some drug money that is kind of owned, if you like, by a French gangster who comes over to investigate what's been happening. And then there's a lot more. There's a kind of like a reveal halfway through the first episode, which is in this spoiler discussion, is actually in all the marketing materials and even the trailer spoils this. So I think we can actually, well, it just, I mean, if you want to avoid it, fine. I'll let Steph decide how to tread the fine line between what is and isn't a spoiler in the show. But what did you make of Hit Point?
Right. So this was a last minute drop from Boyd last night for Kay and I, and I'm really glad it was because I thoroughly enjoyed this. This has been a great week for watching for me. Right, first thing, okay, Nick Blood is delicious. He is so gorgeous. I love him. Also, Saffron Hocking, I mean, that skin, it's just incredible. Right, when I first started watching this, I was like, wow, this is like two cool cops being outfitted by like Primark's latest drop, and they're going to go round and be really, do you know what I mean? That's what it feels like. It's like they're walking out of like a Primark exclusive catalogue and they're going round and they look great.
Is this
and
a compliment? I'm trying to work it out.
No, it's a compliment. Listen, okay. Yeah, look, they, you know, do you know what I mean? They're like, they look good. They look great. They look the part. They don't look battle worn in any way, do they? They look like they've, you know. And I thought, is this gonna take away a bit of authenticity? But I really like the way that it's shot. They kind of have this split screen, cool Guy Ritchie-esque device. So yeah, we start with Nick Blood, and he's in a double egg situation in the fact that he's in his flat, his cool flat, and he's cracking eggs and he gets like 5 doubles. And you kind of think, oh, okay, what's going on? Then you meet him with his partner, Saffron Hocking. So Leo and Bella together, and he's clearly obsessed with her. And she's kind of nonchalant because she is absolute cool girl extreme, but obviously with a deep emotional core. My favorite kind of cool girl. I know someone like that. They're called Kay Romero. right. Yeah. I love their whole dynamic together. They work really well together. They work really well as a pairing. And also I found it genuinely funny. There's some really great lines in it for them. And there's a great bit where they're chasing down a perp. I'm not going to give away any spoilers because I'm already in a lot of trouble with people. So, which is genuinely funny, you get the French baddie in it, which is, you know, requisite. There's a lot of, you know, tropes that you kind of need to have this thing, but I think it's elevated by these two actors that are brilliant, and it's Twisty McTwisterson, of which I'm giving away none of the twists. So yeah, I really liked it, really enjoyed it. I'm definitely going to watch it. And when the last kind of the second half of it, you're like, oh, because I didn't watch the trailer, I was genuinely surprised by all of it.
Yeah, Peter Serafinowicz pops up as the one of it, who's always
chameleon.
Hilarious.
That man, I mean, yeah, I loved him when he was in Amanda Land. I love him and everything.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
God, he's great. Yeah,
giving it full scouse as well. And yes. I hate the word, but I'm going to use it. Tropey.
So it is tropey.
None of this is original, particularly, but it's handled so kind of stylishly and wittily. Created and written by Howard Overman, most famous for Misfits. Remember Misfits on E4,
which
was
great.
And yep. Misfits was very, you know, it took the whole idea of superheroes and turned it on its head and created something really kind of densely layered. And this is doing the same thing. I think it's taking, you know, kind of gangster thriller vibes and trying to create something a bit different. And I think you're right, that kind of banter, to use another awful word, between Nick Blood and Stephen Hawking is great. And that it all rests on that, doesn't it? Now, I am going to compare it to the Hannah Waddingham, Octavia Spencer.
What? You cannot compare.
I am.
Why?
I can do what I like, Steph. Okay. Is that, and
you know, these 400 episodes gone to someone's head.
The reason I bring up the comparison is because that show relies a lot on the chemistry right between those two lead characters.
Okay, that's
and
a fair point.
I don't think the script for that show was witty and clever enough to convince us. I blame the script, not their performances. I think this script is good enough and it makes the banter between them feel not only real, but funny and heightened when it needs to be. There's a chat they have with a large guy about eating burgers and stuff, which is a really funny little kind of 5-minute sequence that doesn't really add anything to the story, right? But it's just a kind of little bit of stuff. And that, what I like about the show is it takes time out every now and then to just have a funny observational conversation. And I think it works really well. So yeah, I was really, really pleasantly surprised as well. Kay?
Yes, I too. And as you say, I think everything hinges on that chemistry and they've got it in spades. So I agree with it. I'm not going to repeat everything you said, but I agree. I found it very entertaining. I particularly like the cat and mouse and fox and ape chase that went on in the container park and how all that unfolds. And the amount of rug pulls, because you think you know what's going on, and then suddenly there's another twist. So overall, I thought it was very funny and entertaining. That's the thing. It's entertaining high stakes as well. My only small it's not even a criticism. It's more an observation.
You can say what you like, Kay. You say what you like.
No, because it's just like I think it's just me. But the title is on this horrible brown background. Right? And it's called
colour palette issue.
Well, it's a colour palette. Well, only because it's called Hit Point and the colour does look like poo. So I'm like,
oh dear.
Shit.
I mean,
problem.
I wasn't expecting that.
I wasn't either, but you know what?
Shit point. I was like, why have they put it against brown? Like,
oh, I see what you mean. Hit point.
Yeah. Right, they've literally got it against a brown that really looks like, I think if you saw it like, if you looked
poo-y.
It again, you'd be like, oh.
Oh
anyway,
God.
It's only a small observation. It didn't detract from my overall enjoyment on this show. It suddenly struck me that it kept on flicking up. And I was like, what?
Wow.
Well, I thought it was part of the, yeah.
I was worried. And now I'm thinking it goes from that pooey thing. And then I was worried at the beginning because I was like, oh God, no, not a container site. You know, when everything, you know, all these things, like there's so many chases in container sites. It is a huge trope. And you're thinking, why is no one manning these container sites, for fuck's sake? You know what I mean? Come on, get it together, people.
It's quite a setting, though, the container site, with all the colourful containers. You know,
but you see them all the time.
Yeah,
just saying.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well,
anyway,
it's well done.
We all enjoyed it, is the bottom line. If we enjoyed it, despite the brown. Hit Point is on You and Dave from Thursday, the 13th of August at 9 o'clock, and I think it'll all be on UK TV and You, the streaming service, as well. And finally, we get to Ricky Gervais's animated sitcom, Alley Cats. Ricky was on the show last week, of course, friend of the pod. I've known him for 25 years. I am in the pocket of Big Gervais. I have to make that absolutely clear. We interviewed him on the live podcast we had. You know, if we'd have had a 400th live, well, maybe we would have asked him to do that as well. Who knows? But in lieu of all that, we've got Alley Cats, which is basically a kind of about a bunch of cats hanging around in a kind of like basement of a deserted building, watching TV, chatting shit, being really rude to each other, and with a couple of kind of story threads, including one little kitty who wants to find a home, which is really, we'll get to that.
Voiced by Joe Hartley.
And a kind of quasi-romance, possibly, between one of the cats and Ricky's cat, Gus, as well. But these are little 15-minute chunks of animation. Kay, are you down with the Alley Cats?
I am down with the Alley Cats. I've watched 3 episodes. I mean, they're very easy to watch, as Boyd said. They're just 15 minutes each. And I just like being in their company because all of these cats, these stray Alley Cats, are voiced by Ricky's mates from Afterlife, basically. So you have Tom Basden, Andrew Brooke, Diane Morgan, who else? Oh, David Earl. Oh, yeah. My God, David Earl.
David Earl gets all the most incredible lines, I think.
He does. He plays Puke.
Yeah.
So my favourite characters are actually Puke, played by David Earl, and Ponce, played by Tom Basden. And they are essentially playing the characters they play in Ricky's shows, right? So, you know, if you like Ricky's shows and you like them in that, you're going to enjoy this because it is essentially Ricky with his mates hanging out, voicing cats, saying the things that they'd probably talk about anyway, which is that, you know, Ricky is essentially just discussing the big themes in life, like death. I mean, at one point they are discussing how they would like to die, which I found quite amusing, the different ways they might do that. It's funny. And he's also airing his grievances and taking the piss and swearing a lot. So if you're sensitive to the C word, I would just give you a friendly warning that this is kitty littered with it. Every few seconds it's just like it's swear central. So overall, like, there's not much of a, like, there's the lost kitten storyline and this potential love interest, as Boyd said. There's not much storyline going on. It's just like watching some cats hanging about.
Yeah. And he compares it to being a podcast.
I was just about to say that it's like a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd say I loved it. Like, as in, I really enjoyed it. It doesn't feel different. I mean, obviously the animation is really good, by the way. I'm not really into animation, but I thought all the cats looked great and really sort of connected with their, actors. I thought the little quirks of the actors were really well reflected in them. There's this beautiful, like, weirdly, I got caught up and there's this scene with like, clouds floating past, which I just thought was really nicely done.
Yeah.
Nice touches. So yeah, other than that, I don't think it's not remarkably different from Ricky's back catalogue in terms of the content. And if you like that, you're going to love this. One thing that stuck out to me was the fat kid jokes. I feel are boring now. Oh. I've got to say, yeah, I do feel
that's
boring.
A kind of an allusion to Afterlife, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I mean, famously in Afterlife, there was a funny joke in that, and it was about this kid being ginger and stuff like this. But for some reason, when it happened, I think it's in episode 2, maybe, and I just was like, I'm sort of like, not only because it's 2026 and like, who, you know, we've sort of all evolved and moved on from that. But from a, like, a comedian point of view, I'm just like, Ricky's done that joke. So I don't feel like, you know, I think he can move on from that now. But other than that, I think there are going to be a lot of people who are offended by it. It will cause, inverted commas, controversy. Ricky won't give a shit. He's just doing his thing. What this really is a testament to is the power of Ricky Gervais.
His endurance,
Also, like, his mites in the TV world that, like, Netflix have signed off this thing. I've never seen a show. It does a lot of things that are unexpected. 15-minute chunks of essentially really nothing actually happening other than cats hanging about. And don't get me wrong, it's enjoyable and entertaining. Every other word's the C word. And it that to me is a real sort of like, you know, flag and sign of like, I can do what I want.
Yeah, yeah,
I can do what I want, and I will be backed by Netflix because I have this back catalogue that's incredible. I'm incredibly successful. I'm good at what I do. And so now, creatively, I have absolute carte blanche to do what I want. So, yeah.
No, I think you summed it up. Steph?
I mean, I'm going to hold my hands up and just say, in my world, Ricky Gervais can do absolutely no wrong. I am a massive fan. I loved it so much. This is absolutely my type of humour. One of the things I wanted to mention about the animation was I really enjoyed this show. Feels very uniquely British to me. It feels like a very British humor. And what I really enjoyed about the animation is they are animating British streets, British scenes, and I felt like that gave a layer to it that made me feel warm and fuzzy. It was like, oh yeah, that's the corner shop. Oh yeah, they're the high-rise flats. It felt like somewhere I live, right? So that for me, I was immediately into all that. Some of my favorite lines, and I don't want, because they're only 15 minute episodes, but the jokes do just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. Love living in ignorance, shit for brains and proud.
I wrote that down.
And then, am I a bit of an arsehole? No, but you've got potential. Like this kind of, and they just keep coming. They just keep coming. And there's little details like when they're trying to get this little cat home and he chooses Vanessa Carlton's A Thousand Miles song, that kind of stuff, you know, I think he's just a genius. Diane Morgan's character is amazing.
He's brilliantly stupid. But
When she talks, I nearly wet myself when she talks about when they're having the discussion about how to end their lives, and she's saying, like, yeah, no, but you'll just land on your feet. And she was like, yeah, but you've got 9 lives. So when I jump off the 10th time, it'll be fine. They're like, no. She was like, yeah, I'll just jump off 10 times. It was going on and I just couldn't, it was absolutely brilliant. It's obscene. It's, you know, you cannot watch it with small children around or anyone
it's not that kind of animated show.
Ears are offended.
Unless you're really open-minded about your small child.
I mean, I think it's an absolute triumph. I loved every minute of it. Thought it was brilliant.
Thank God for that, because there's definitely like, someone came up to me in the office, right, when I did the Ricky Gervais interview in Heat and said, oh, well, they'd seen the trailer for Alley Cats. And they were like, oh, it's going to be terrible, isn't it? And you're going to say you love it. And, it, you know, it's all. And I had to say, well, because I'd seen it at that point. I watched the whole thing, you know, all 6 episodes. It's effectively like a feature if you watch it all in one go, an animated feature. But it just is, if you like Ricky and you like, it is like, as he's deliberately tried to do, a kind of very plot-light hangout show with these...
It's a hang. It's an absolute hang.
And it's just a joy to spend time with them. It's uncensored. As you say, who can get away with being this uncensored and this rude? Not only the C words, which I mean, fully embrace, obviously, the effing and the seeing, but the rudeness of what David L. comes out with sexually.
Oh, my God, amazing.
Sexually is extraordinary. So it's the actual detail of what he says that makes it seem that it's so shocking. But it's just a real joy. It's just a joy. And the other thing is, we've talked, I don't want to get bogged. We haven't got, I could go on for hours about this, but famously on this podcast, James and me and Kate, to some extent, not you, sir, none of us are huge fans of animation. And yet the thing about this is, and this was like, I think it's like this with The Simpsons for me a lot. The classic period of The Simpsons, you forget it's animated after a while and you just enjoy it for what it is. And that is what this did for me. And by the way, as you were saying, Kay, the backgrounds are often beautiful. It looks as great as it needs to look, depicting, like, beautifying, you know, literally like alleyways and, you know, dodgy.
Yeah, it feels like home. Yeah. It's lovely.
And what I say is, one, I started the interview with him by asking him about this scene, because I love, there's a scene in episode 4 which is part of the romantic subplot that I alluded to indeed, which plays out, it's a montage, and it plays out to There Is a Light That Never Goes Out by The Smiths, which is one of my favourite songs of all time, as it is one of Ricky's. This could be a new feature. I've done my favourite films of all time. I'm now doing my favourite songs of all time. And it's so beautifully done. So in the middle of this rude, shocking, outrageous thing, there's time for a lovely bit of romance to the Smiths, and it's, oh my God, it's brilliant. And he had to get permission from Johnny Marr and Morrissey separately, because they're allowed to talk to each other, famously. And they both agreed. He had to describe the scene. He talks about it in the interview. And can you imagine? And I really, I want to be a fly on the wall. Morrissey sits back to watch the show and watches his song used in that way in this show. I love it indeed. And as which would be no surprise to anyone, even though I am in the pocket of Big Gervais, it's still fantastic.
But Kay and I loved it, and we're not in the pocket.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Oh my
God. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So Alley Cat is already out now. It was embargoed for review until it came out last Friday. So that's why I reviewed it this week. And I'll quickly say what else is on this week. There's Reacher, the new series of Reacher, which James and I are both obsessed with. We're both big Jack Reacher fans. That's on Prime Video on the fourth season on Wednesday, the 12th of August. We'll be doing that on the next Pilot Plus. Women in Blue, or Las Azules, the Spanish language show on Apple TV on Wednesday, the 12th of August. That's season two of that show. There's a show called My Brilliant Career on Netflix on Thursday, which is an Australian drama, a period drama, with a great cast, including Christopher Chung from Slow Horses and Anna Chancellor from Four Weddings and Genevieve O'Reilly from Andor, etc., etc. So that looks really interesting as well. Oh my God, what a week it's been of recordings. Thank you so much to Kay, particularly for, you know,
yes,
joining
well done,
me
you
for all of these.
Thank you.
To Steph. This is actually Steph's holiday, people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
this
we can,
is her so-called
please
holiday.
Do,
talking
please,
to us.
Please do carry on slagging her off for opinions. But
we
bear
don't
in mind,
encourage
at the
people.
Same time, at the same time, bear in mind she has taken out this chunk of her holiday to do this recording with us. And thanks to you all for listening. I don't know why I'm talking about the whole show.
It's an extended leave.
It's an extended leave.
No, we should thank them for 400 episodes.
Yes, thank you.
Should.
And thanks to you all for listening. You've seen us through 400 episodes of this thing that we call Pilot TV. We wouldn't do it without you, no matter what you think of our criticisms. And I don't know what we're doing next week because we're recording this so far in advance. Whatever it will be fascinating listening, I'm sure. Thank you to everyone. Pilot out.